iRadio. The
phone lines are... Today, as we begin our first kickoff here, we have a few things to say. First of all, with big gratitude in our hearts, we really want to thank Joe and Shelley from Tobacco Grove, because a month ago this was a storefront and they've turned this room into something very special here for our community. Thank you.
I agree with you.
Yeah, okay. So husband and wife, get ready for it. What did I say? And also, they also today very generously donated your lunch. So thank you very much for that. Well, we also want to thank Accent Digital, Morgan, and Bradley, who is our webmaster. We kicked off our website yesterday. Brand new, incredible, interactive website, freefireradio.com. And Morgan has been working on this till all hours of the night, trying to figure out all this wiring and everything so that we can bring this to you. So if there's a few bumps in the road today, please be patient with us as we get what we need to get out to you. But the most important thing is to bring you the juice.
Well, you know, one of the things, too, is that, first of all, again, thank you all for being here. The other thing is that when we're doing this, we did this in a radio station before in a little studio, and we didn't really have to worry too much about what we were wearing or, you know, you could stand up and walk. And people that were in the studio with us realized that. So it's a little bit different here before, you know, before an audience. But we did still bring our lucky duck here in the front that one of our listeners gave to us one day by driving by in a truck. And when he came up, I thought it was a drive-by shooting. Instead, he gave us the duck, and so we've had that with us the whole time. We're still going with us. Today, we wanted to kick off every Friday at noontime, 12 to 1 lunch with us, but also have a town hall meeting and talk about topics that are of interest to our community. And we're going to kick off today's lunch with a topic of health care. Government, you know, the government helping us with our health care from one side, and you might say, and maybe the government intruding into our health care probably from another side. And with all civil discourse, you need to hear both sides. And we were fortunate enough today to have representatives that can talk about this. Dr. Andre Van Maal is a board-certified family physician in private practice here. He speaks and writes on bioethics and Christian apologetics, is experienced in short-term medical missions, and is a former U.S. naval officer. He and his wife, Evelyn, live in Reading with two sons, a daughter, and is currently parent their sixth foster daughter. Dr. Van Maal has been on our show before, and we appreciate you being here, Doctor. Our other guest
today is Paula Percy, who has been a registered nurse for 25 years. She is also on the American Association of Audit Service of SARB.
I'm on Shasta
County SARB board. And she is on the Shasta County Public Health Advisory Board, and also is a graduate of the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville. All right. So please welcome our guests, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, we're going to start out with a statement by Dr. Van Maal, and then Paul, and they're going to, and then we're going to discuss healthcare, the healthcare issues. As you know, this is such an important topic in our society today. Really, it's even a little bit difficult to discuss everything because there's been nothing really in writing hard written proposals that anybody has seen, and there's been a lot of rumors. So we're going to be talking generalities as part of it, I'm sure, but I'm sure there's also specifics we're going to be talking about. And also during this, if there's questions, you have questions, we'll be out there in the audience, and we encourage you to ask questions.
We have a program microphone. So yeah. We'll be working the room and being able to invite you in to ask your questions.
And so let's start today with Dr. Van Maal.
Can everybody hear me all right? Are we on? Good.
Okay,
how are we doing now?
Yeah.
Better? I've been told I can take a breath. 7 or 8 minutes for the intro. Is that fair?
That's fine.
Okay. The issue here is whatever you want to call it, nationalizing healthcare or a single payer system, changing the status quo towards something more governmental. Is it a prescription for success or is it a problem? I see top three problems with our healthcare system. Number one, being the healthcare cost. I'm not talking about the cost of the nation, that it's 17% of our economy, because it is 17% of our economy. Growth industry, all kinds of jobs, creativity come out of it, all kinds of pluses. What I'm talking about is that any individual who gets hospitalized with the right thing at the wrong time without the right coverage can be ruined. Secondly, insurance availability and price. Our former Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop, said it's become a situation now where it's down to the insured, the uninsured, and the uninsurable. And it was never supposed to be that way. Insurance is supposed to be a pooling of risk, not a skimming of the virtually risk-free. There are things we can do to change that. And thirdly, financing existing government entitlements. No industrialized nation can do it, but everybody's afraid to say so. For a specific example, in the United States, the combined cost of Medicare and Social Security by 2020 will account for one of every four tax dollars. Just the medical part of things, Medicare and Medicaid by 2050 will account for four of every four tax dollars. That's unworkable. We have a situation there. And that's just keeping things as they are. The problem is too many people think going to a single-payer option means we have everything that we have now and it'll be free. And they're in for a very rude surprise. We speak of 47 million people uninsured. The Kaiser Family Foundation, which is nobody's idea of a radical conservative group, I picked them because they're among the most liberal, say that number corrects to 14 million. Most other groups say it's even less than that. For people that are involuntarily uninsured who are legal residents. If you get the higher number by adding the 12 million undocumented immigrants, adding people that are actually covered by something else, Medicare, Medicaid, public health service, but don't have supplemental insurance. So yes, technically they're not insured, but they're most certainly not uncovered. And people making $50,000 and over who have chosen for a time not to have insurance, say they're 23 years old and figure they're bulletproof and nothing can touch them. But it's 14 million that are involuntarily uninsured. Certainly, we can come up with something for 14 million short of wrecking our current system. There's other things I can say on that, we'll just pass on. No U.S. emergency room can say no to anybody on the basis of costs. People abroad know that. We have healthcare tourists who make their first stop after landing at an international airport, showing up in an emergency room with the appropriate paperwork of diagnosis to get treatments for something they can't get at all or in a reasonable time in other industrialized nations. We have hospitals in the northernmost U.S. cities from Seattle to Bangor, Maine, that have entire wings full of Canadian patients. Paying to get done here where they can't get done in their own country in a reasonable amount of time. Now, there are two guarantees of nationalizing healthcare. The one is rationing, because anytime something goes from being any kind of business to a government entitlement, the impetus is how do you control costs? And universally, that ends up being rationing. The second thing is hyper-regionalization. Things get very reduced in where they're done. For us, that would be worse than it would be for anybody else. 304 million people. We are by far the world's most populous industrialized country, the world's third largest and third most populous country. We don't all live in a nation the size of Texas. We don't all live in a half dozen major urban areas. There are 200 cities in the U.S. And the problems that we would face by that regionalization and rationing would be worse than what anybody else would see. Several pundits have said the first casualty of doing it would be the collapse of the Canadian system because we're their safety valve. There's other things I could tell you about the Canadian, the British, Swedish system, whatever. Perhaps we'll save that for question and answers for sake of brevity. My point is that we will not do better with nationalizing healthcare than the other industrialized nations have. Some say healthcare is a right, and we're one of the few countries that are industrialized that don't view it as so. You know, healthcare is a necessary service. It's not a right. And the nations that do treat it as a right, or say it is a right, I should say, don't treat it as one. Take the UK. They're proud of themselves beside belief that the National Health Service last November succeeded in their goal that nobody waits more than 18 weeks for a specialty hospitalization. And there's 750,000 people on the waiting list. But healthcare is a right. Well, what kind of a right is that? See what I'm saying? It may be a language they give you, but they don't treat it with the respect due. So what I'm saying is, I think we do a better job honing up to it, calling healthcare a necessary service than arbitrarily calling it a right that we couldn't hope to meet. It's said that the U.S. spends more for healthcare than any other country in the world. That's true. We're by far the largest industrialized nation. We spend more for everything. We spend more for cosmetics. We spend more for dog food. We spend more for linens. That tells me nothing to say we spend more. The second complaint is, well, what about our life expectancy? You know, a lot of Europe, guys live to be 79. Here in the United States, it's 77. That's apples and oranges. There's lots of reasons to die that have nothing to do with healthcare. Those, you know, it's not an A and B thing. So that's kind of a false criticism there. The thing that said about infant mortality, not the more stats are so bad, or infant mortality is, depending on what year you look at, anywhere from the 17th to the 20th worst in the world. Our problem with statistics is rather uniform, that we keep very honest count, even if it makes us look awful. If a child is born at 20 weeks gestation, terribly premature, we count that as the day of birth. If they die the next day, we count that as the day of death. We don't say, oh, it was a miscarriage, which is what a lot of the rest of the world does. In Russia and Belarus, a severely premature child that dies a week later doesn't even show up on the healthcare stats. Second part of that is we have the best neonatal and perinatal medicine in the world. We invented those specialties, as we did very many others. A severely premature child here has the greatest chance of living. But, obviously, severely premature children will have worse health statistics than a child that's born term. So we get penalized for that too. So we're penalized coming and going for things that are actually pluses of our system. So be careful when you hear those kind of stats mentioned. When you look at disease-specific outcomes, how do you do with heart disease here? Not how many people have it. How do you do if you're diagnosed with cancer here compared to most of Europe? Our stats are the best in the world. But to bunch it up in something arbitrary and throw in life expectancy and this and that, you see how that's mixing the stew to make things a bit deceptive. I haven't done this last thing. Hasn't the U.S. system shown that for-profit medicine is a failure? Well, you know, more than 50 cents out of every dollar spent on healthcare already comes from the government. I don't see how increasing that is going to fix things. We have five levels of nationalized healthcare here: Medicare, Medi-Cal, public health service, military medicine, and the VA system. Which of those would you like to have as our absolute national standard? I don't think any one of them. So what can be done? I have some ideas. We'll save that for later. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Doug. By the way, for people that are listening, our phone number here is 530-710-0765. So call in, and you also will be able to ask questions here. Now, our other guest.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, let me finish talking about, you've got a number of accomplishments here, Paula, that we just didn't even get to. American Association of Medical Audit Specialists, National Association of Clinical Documentation Improvement Specialists, a 2006 recipient of the American Heart Association Heart Server Award, former regional faculty member, basic life support instructor, and of course, the Democratic representative of the Central Committee for District 3. So, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Of course, Sam. First of all, I'm going to make my voice is very, very short, hopefully. A single-payer system is a system where the one source, which would be the federal government, would collect funds, which would come from the tax sources that would replace insurance premiums, and thus those funds would go through the federal government, and of course our cooperative payment that would go with that would go in, and then thus those funds would be reversed to the insurance company. We have multiple issues that affect healthcare today. It's not a simple issue, but it's very complex, and I don't think people realize how complex it truly is. What we have here is a broken wheel, and the wheel can't turn without one of the other parts of the wheel working. We have registration, we have eligibility issues, quality control, portability, electronic record systems. And what I mean by that is, number one, where I'd like to start is the emergency room. Right now, as of 1996, President Clinton implemented what we call the EMTALA regulations. Those EMTALA regulations prevent emergency rooms from turning patients away. He found that patients were going in very sick and they were dying because emergency rooms would not treat them. So now we have a prevention for emergency rooms being able to turn that away. But as a result of that, people with low income or people that can't afford to go to a doctor's office or people that don't have a primary physician have difficulties being seen. And as you know, one of the primary sources here in our area here, especially in the city of Reading, is Shasta Community Health Center. They service a lot of low-income families. We have a Hope Van that services our homeless population there, and they are overloaded with patients right now, and they do the best that they can every day to service our population, but they can't do it alone. Also, we have emergency rooms here where there are two areas here, and they're overloaded pretty much also. We should not see a bladder infection patient in the emergency room at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which may incur a bill about $3,000 or more. We are spending lots of money on that. And a lot of time after that, the patient leaves, those charges end up having to be written off or go off as bad debt because they cannot pay the bill. Those things incur and run up health costs for us. So we have to do something with those patients. We can't leave them out there. In this period of our lives, I have seen more cardboard signs on the street than ever in the history of our society. It should not be, and it especially should not be for our veterans. I think a lot of our veterans, they go over there and they give their lives for their country and they come back with Agent Orange and all kinds of things, black lung disease, and they cannot get health care. That should not be. All of these things drive health care costs. Not to mention vendors. The vendors come in with their products. Patients only see the back end results of the bills that come from the hospitals, but they don't see what the vendors charge up front to the hospitals. We have to pay for those products in the hospital or we won't get them. And if you don't get those out, you can't service the patients. You can't do surgery, you can't do laparoscopic procedures or anything if you don't pay your bills. Matter of fact, you can't keep the lights on either. So these are some things that are incurring cost, and these are things that we have to control. Also, you have to realize right now the world technologically is not on the same line. We're on different planets when it comes to that. Right now in our medical records department, as an example of that, some hospitals have gone electronic, which they have electronic records. Those records, now we have the capability of sending those records very quickly across the country to all insurance companies, whoever needs those records, Medicare, but some hospitals are not on that frequency. Some hospitals are still on what we call a paper chart system, and that means that they're still documented in hand narration. They have longer periods of time trying to get those records out. Not to mention we have insurance bills going back and forth that may be denied, and then it may take the hospital another 6 months before they're even paid. Where people think that hospitals and doctor's offices are getting paid, they may not get paid for 6 months. But when the light bill comes, the light company wants their bill the next month, and they have to pay it. They have to pay staff overhead costs. Staff overhead, they want a raises every year. Who's a doctor to tell them I can't give my staff a raise? They may not have any employees to work. Not to mention the average nurse and doctor right now are approximately 47.7 years old, and they are not being replaced. So who's going to take care of the patients? The baby boomer age is now going to become the Medicare retirement age, and we better be thinking about what we're going to do with this. It takes a doctor right now probably about $300,000 after they get out of school. They have to pay that money back. Just on a general practitioner's salary could average about $167 a year, unless you're a surgeon or some of the others in which their salaries range up a little bit higher, and registered nurses also. And in addition to that, the nursing schools, which are staggered behind, the enrollments have been decreased. We aren't getting them out. Average nurse, it takes them 2 to 4 years to finish school. We need teachers to teach them, nurses and doctors. And we are deficient in those things also. So all of these things drive healthcare. Just think about it. If you have COBRA and you're laid off of work, suppose your company goes bankrupt. Guess what happens? You lose your COBRA and you have nowhere to go. You have no insurance whatsoever. What are those people supposed to do? They've been working all that long time. They paid their dues. and thinking they're going to have that COBRA until I can find another job, and they end up with nothing. We have to do something with those people also. Then what about the migrant workers, or which some people refer to as illegal aliens? Those people, some of them working in the orchards here, working with some of our farms, have been working in those farm areas for years, exposed to pesticides and what have you. Now we're seeing a rise in leukemia in pediatric patients. Never before. Some of those people actually are citizens or could be citizens. The reason I say that is because it takes about 20 years for one of those people to actually become a U.S. citizen. It is an extremely long process. Some of them have been working here for a long time, but they haven't been noted. Just like some people could get Medicaid, but they don't know that they can because they haven't been educated to that. These are things we have to get past. Communication barriers. We have patients that speak Spanish that are living here in the country, and a lot of us strongly feel that they should be speaking English. But of course, how are they going to speak English? They have to be taught. Who's going to pay for that? We don't know. So those are other things that we have to answer also. So for us to get past that, we have to fix the wheel. We have to deal with payment. We have to deal with malpractice insurance, where doctors are getting sued and nurses are getting sued. Doctors are ordering tests that they may not have to, or doctors are ordering tests that they may not would have ordered, because they have to make sure that that's covered, because the insurance company is telling them, we're not going to pay you because you don't have any evidence-based information to say why you need this for this patient or why you make your diagnosis on that. So all of these things drive healthcare costs. And until we meet those needs, we are going to have a problem. But I do tell you one thing we should not have in this country, where insurance costs more than your mortgage. If you get insurance and go on COBRA, it could cost you anywhere from $1,000 to $1,300 a month. That is absolutely unbelievable. That costs more than your mortgage. We can't afford that, and we can't pay that, and it shouldn't be. You think about it. Some young people never get sick for 40 years. We as parents are taking care of our children. They are going to college. We've been paying for health care for them for the whole time, for 26 years, 40 years. They what, maybe have a doctor's appointment every now and then, or go to the dentist and get their teeth cleaned. You know what? That's free money. Where's all that money going? Does anybody know? No, we don't. Malpractice insurance. Doctors are paying sometimes $150,000 a year. Some doctors never get sued. Where's that money going? Think about all of the doctors out of the whole country, all of the nurses that have malpractice insurance that never get sued. Where is that money going? It's going somewhere. I'm not getting it, and you aren't getting it. Somebody's getting it. Well, we better start looking. And I think this is a process for us to start fixing the wheel. You do not want companies dominating insurance. I think insurance companies have their role. Insurance companies go from state to state. They're different. You have 80% Blue Cross maybe in Alabama. You might have 30% in California. All of these things are all different factors that people do not look at. People really think that hospitals are getting all this money, but a lot of times they aren't. A lot of that is adjusted off. But anyway, thank you so much for hearing me. I can go on also.
You know, we have an hour.
We have two obviously, we have two people that are passionate about this. And for some reason, I'm hearing them agreeing on some of the stuff.
Yes,
in fact, I think you're going to see that. Now, how many people here think that our health care system is perfect? All right. How many people here, just by a show of hands and I'll just talk about it, how many people here think that we need to make some changes to our health care system?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, I think what the problem is do we throw away everything that's there, or do we fix the parts that need fixing?
Yes.
I think that's what most people would believe. But I think what's coming out in some of the from different networks and different, you know, the quote experts talking about it is you think that, oh, we're going to throw it all out. We need to fix everything at one time. And this is my opinion, is that you never take a whole system and crash it to fix three parts of it. So I think what our representatives back in the East Coast in Washington, D.C. should be looking at is, in my opinion, is how to fix those things like, one, tort reform. Two, why should you lose your health insurance because you have to change a job because your company quit, you know, went out of business? Why should you be disqualified from health care because you have a pre-existing condition? You know, these are things that need to be fixed.
Absolutely.
You know, and to use statistics, scare statistics that show that, oh, we're the 37th in the world. You know, I've also read that, and again, it's apples and oranges. You have to look at how do we fix those parts that need to be fixed. Nobody should be paying $1,300 or $1,400 for health insurance. At least I don't see that. Now, on the other hand, because most people can't afford that. Now, I go through the VA system, and it's the last thing I'm going to say, because I like to hear from our people out here. I use the VA system. I'm very happy with the VA system right here in Redding. You know, they take care of, they have people that care. I go in there for my regular physicals, they can't do enough for me. If I have to see a specialist, however, it's 6 weeks to 2 months. And I've been told by the leadership at the clinic, if they get 2,000 more people in there, say a month, for some reason, this service that they have is going to crash. And I think that's another thing that both sides are addressing. We bring 14 or 20 million more people into the system. Are we going to be able to handle that? So, questions from the audience.
Let me come out with the microphone, and we'll find your name and what your question is and who you're posing it to.
And you don't have to give your whole name in case somebody's looking for you.
We have any questions in the house for our panel of experts? Okay, we know who you are, John.
Good afternoon.
Speaking of the microphone.
We got it now?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, doctor, nurse. Listen, from what I hear from both of you is something entirely different. We don't seem to have a true health care problem. We have a health care insurance problem. And the sooner we recognize that, I think the better off we'll be. I think the health care in America is tremendous. I mean, people do come here from around the world, and they come here because we have the best, and they know they're going to get taken care of. What we don't have the best of is health care insurance. We have major industry ripping off the people. I mean, they cancel us. When we use it, they demand higher payments. If we have something wrong with us, if you go into the hospital and they find out you have something, you're on. You're out. Just as fast as they can cut you loose, they're going to cut you loose. We need to address controlling insurance. I think health care is just fine. And now I'm going to take an exception from that, and I'm going to go into an anecdotal thing of mine that it's a real problem. I've had experiences recently where I had to go into emergency health care facilities to visit friends who were there to take care of other people. What I found is that they are impacted with illegal aliens, not so-called illegal aliens, specific illegal aliens, people who are undocumented and we can't turn away. Those people are getting prime care, they're getting taken care of, and they're not paying a nickel for it. Now, what's the answer to that problem? I feel there is an answer. I think the United States of America needs to institute a program whereby the nation of origin of these illegals are billed for and required to pay for those payments for their citizens. Can they do that? Yes, they can. Those people such as Mexico that have privileged status in this country, that have trade agreements and everything else, if we stop that and say, until you pay the health care of your illegal aliens in this country, we are not going to do business with you any further. They'll pay the bill. And it needs to be done all over the world. The illegal aliens need to be billed. I mean, the nations of the illegal aliens need to be billed, and it needs to be enforced. Our borders need to be enforced. I don't know. I didn't ask you guys a question. I just made a great big long statement.
May I infer?
That's okay. Statements are okay, too.
Okay.
So I'm going to pass this back to Linda, and I'm going to sit down, but those are the points I had to make.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. I will actually leave on the table the issue of how a nation deals with enforcing its borders, because I think that's just a whole lot broader than what we're dealing with here, necessary as it is. But some ideas that have come up are how to fix the insurance thing. And mind you, this stuff could have been done 20 years ago. But here we are now, so there it is. One, legalize the interstate sale of insurance. If Kansas insurance can do it better for me than the California Blues, I'm good with that. And if that means the California Blues go under, I'm fine with that too. It's how the market works. Now, several people who deal with insurance told me, well, there's a lot of reasons that it's only interstate sale, like protecting people from all kinds of fraud. Obviously, one of the answers to that is, okay, if you're going to sell across state borders, here are the terms you must meet. And it's enforced by this agency and this agency, who are paid well to make sure you don't rip anybody off. My sister used to deal with insurance, or used to be in the business, says another solution that you wouldn't even have to go across state lines is the same thing we do with automobile insurance, assigned risk insurance. You can't drive without insurance, supposedly. But what do you do about the pool of people who are uninsurable? Well, what they do with assigned risk is if you're selling insurance in this state, you're part of this lottery, and these people are assigned, you know, equally among the different insurance companies, so nobody has to take the big hit, and they are responsible for providing the minimum coverage. And with health insurance, you figure once somebody gets it, starts getting into the system, you got high blood pressure, it's treated, you're less of a risk. You've got high cholesterol, it's treated, you're less of a risk. Their rates should have to go down. Now, the question remains, how does the state choose to pay for those individuals with this? Fine, that's open for discussion, but the point is it's something we could do. Also, making it so that we eliminate both the legal and the tax hindrances to having high deductible insurances with health savings accounts. Secondly, things ought to be portable, as you were mentioning. Thirdly, I'm hesitating here, I lost my place. The same tax breaks that you get for business purchased insurance, you ought to get if you purchase it individually. What's the difference? Why is one getting a tax break and the other isn't? It should be equal across the board. That's easily done. The last thing about the lawyers, I actually think that tort reform would do less for medicine than people think it would. Having said that, though, it applies to everything else. It's so important. If you own a home, it matters to you, tort reform. If you sign the front of a paycheck, it matters to you. If you're ever on the wrong side of an angry person, it matters to you. So tort reform counts, even if it didn't do a lot for us in medicine. But the current administration has told us they're not interested in doing it, or so the president said to the AMA in their meeting earlier in the summer. And we can't make any of these proposals work well without having some kind of tort reform. Otherwise, as you nationalize health care, the doctors, nurses, and everybody else involved become a more and more prime target. And if we're not going to protect them, well, if you think we have a problem with not enough providers now, wait till you see what happens when people think they have to leave the profession rather than being a big bullseye for nuisance lawsuits.
You know, you got to love being a tobacco and brew. Because a lot of the people here that have supported us through our whole time of being in the radio and now on the internet have been our Patriot Guard riders and our Missing in America Project and Old Guard riders and American Legion riders. And, you know, damn it, I love the sound of that Harley. As you can hear, I have no problem with it.
In case you're wondering, Pete, that was the sound of a Harley. Did you have something to add to to John or to Dr. Van Maal's statement?
Well, the only thing that I really have to add is that in the Baucus plan that they have right now, what I hear I'm kind of saying, at least my interpretation of it, is that it does have co-ops in there, a cooperative planning in there for us in that program. And kind of, if you think about a credit union, it would be something like that, like a credit union, and people would have membership into the cooperative, and then they, as members, would make a determination and they would vote on their health care, and that is a way in there. So single-payer system is not noted in that plan, and that's something that is in there, We have to have something, and of course, if the single payer system is something that people are dead set against, we have to have something that people can use and that we can depend on, because the gross domestic product right now is almost at 20%, which is really high. I mean, Canada's is even in 2006 was right at 10%, which is a lot lower than us. So we should be able to do better for us. I mean, we are a rich nation, and we have a whole lot more, and we should be able to plan. Also, I feel that the insurance companies should not be writing regulations. They should not be making a determination what doctor can see you, or if he's out the network, or can you have this test done, and have to wait 2 weeks before you can get your physical therapy started when the doctor's ordered it and wants it done right away. Why should that be? The doctor should be making the decision. That's something that we should have, and I don't understand why people are out there fighting for the insurance. I don't want the government to make any decision for me. They're already having decisions made for them. The insurance company is making it for them. So I'd much rather have somebody on a panel that's appointed by the government that has medical people on there that are making policies for us. I'd much rather have them on there making those decisions.
We have another question from an audience member, Bill.
Thank you, Linda. My name is Bill Filon. I'm a retired United States Marine, and I'm the commander of the Purple Heart chapter here in town. And like you, ma'am, I am married to a registered nurse. My wife has a bachelor's in nursing. My wife trained in the UK. She came over in the 70s when there was an acute shortage, and she got her bachelor's degree from Washington, D.C., from George Washington University, and she worked there. But anyway, to make a long story short, talking about single payer and talking about socialized medicine, she could tell you, ma'am, some horror stories. There is one stethoscope per ward in the UK. The resident uses it, the interns use it, and the nurses switch off. And if you are dying and bleeding to death, they will see you. Otherwise, you will wait 8 months for a pair of John Lennon glasses. And we just do not need single-payer government insurance in this town. I'm sorry. Now, I'm a retired Marine. I have government. I have TRICARE for life, like the colonel. Uh-huh. But I don't want it for my family. Thank you.
I do understand what you're saying, and everyone is entitled to that. And I love collecting all the information and understanding people's take on that. But what people have to realize is that this is America. This is not Canada. It's not the UK. It's not France or anywhere else. Canada's system is not going to work for the United States because this is a different country. Legally, we have a different legal system. Therefore, it's not going to work. We have different policies and regulations. So what I am saying is that we have to do something. We have to have a system, and we have to do something for all of us to have some care. We have to do something for children. They have to have dental care. A lot of them have cavities in their teeth. They can't even go to the dentist, dying from abscesses. So this is what I am saying, that we should be able as a nation to come together, whether it's independent, Republican, and Democrat, and come to some consensus on how we're going to take care of ourselves. Thank you.
Dr. Van Noll.
Just a little thing to add. You know, when we make the step, should we make the step? I hope we don't make the step into any manner of single payer, big government option. It's a lever for the rest. It just keeps going. Right. Once you're fully there, there is no going back. You know, people talk about, well, if the next election we can straighten it out. No, there are some things when you break, they're gone. Because all the little intermediary suppliers, the people who did this and that, when there was any kind of, you know, employment profit to be made in it, they're gone, and you can't recreate it. So it's not a mistake we'll be able to correct if we make it.
Paul, I think I heard a little noise over here. Did you want to make a comment?
There was one other thing I did want to say is that something else that we realized, that we've been doing so many free services for other countries, and I don't think we realize it. We have medical devices that come import into our country all the time. Also, some pharmaceuticals that are imported into our country. And I'm sure that you realize that if you had someone working in your place here and you had people coming in and they had to wait on them, what do you have if you go to a hotel or anywhere else, or your eating establishment, 18% gratuity on there or more most of the time? They want to get paid. So why should we have people coming across our borders, bringing in medical devices and stuff, and they're making a whole lot of money off of us, but we don't charge any taxes for that? That is another area that they're looking at, too.
by the most conservative estimates, 50% of all the world's new pharmaceuticals come from the U.S. That can be shrunk. Now, part of the problem is we pay for all those R&D costs because our market will bear it, whereas other nations negotiate for the price of it. We can do better on that. I mean, I want us to still be the source of development, but I don't like the idea that I'm paying for R&D costs for medicines that the French, Germans, and Japanese are getting on our tab. That's another example of the world I'm going to discuss.
Well, in case you're just tuning in, we are here at Tobacco and Brew. You're hearing the great sound of motorcycles outside. This is Free Fire Radio, and every Friday we'll be kicking off here at noon. Today we're talking healthcare, and we have some other questions from anybody in the house.
And let me also add that our phone number here is 530-710-0765. From people that are listening to us can call in. And let me just make a statement before we go to our audience here. Retired military have their insurance is called TRICARE.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I've discovered since coming to Reading is that I didn't understand that because, you know, TRICARE is for veterans who have retired from the military 20 years or more, or they've been medically retired, wounded, whatever the reason, that doctors do not take TRICARE in Reading. There's not a lot of doctors that take TRICARE. And that's always been my question is, well, this is a government insurance. You know, and I think that's what it comes down to. And then also in our previous life, we were doing research on Medicare. Doctors are now not taking Medicare patients because some of the things we talked about here is the payment schedules are 6 months late. They're getting less money for the patients they see. So there's something that has got to be fixed. But that's a portion has to be fixed. I didn't say everything has to be fixed, but there are things that need to be addressed because, as Paula pointed out, you know, as baby boomers, we're getting up there. And we're going to be hitting Medicare here in like 4 years, and that's going to be a huge amount of people that are coming into Medicare, and I don't think we're ready for it.
Please, if we can put a number on that, in 2 years' time is the first wave of 78 million baby boomers who come eligible for Medicare. So that's how many we're talking about absorbing into that element of the government system just in the next few years.
Already broke.
And we're already, you know, and they're talking about, what is it, they can save $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go to freefireradio.com, our website, I wrote, you know, every day we're going to have a little bit different opinion up there, but if we can save $500 billion, was that how much I think?
$410 billion.
Why aren't we doing that now? Why aren't we fixing that now?
All right, and your name?
You said so many things, ma'am, that I would love to address, but I'm going to choose this one rather than steal too much time. I was wondering if you were aware that the rejection rate of medical care is far more higher for Medicare than from any insurance company. Glenn Beck showed some statistics the other day that were quite amazing. And Medicare is already not satisfactorily attending to the needs. And I don't hear my doctor complaining about the insurance companies anywhere near as much as I do. The government red tape of Medicare is just awesome. He says about 25% of his office goes toward actually caring for patients. The rest is horrible, nightmare, expensive, red tape. There's very little financial gain for a man to become a doctor anymore compared to what he used to be, and I don't think that's good for our economy.
You know what, I absolutely agree with you, and that's one of the things that is being fixed. Now, yeah, actually that's part of the things that they are fixing right now, is some of that red tape and making it easier for doctors. Not to mention they are increasing the payment reimbursement for physicians. I have been a medical audit specialist, and I'm nationally certified for the last 10 years. And I am telling you, if you look at a hospital's reimbursement, a lot of times they are banking on about 46% Medicare reimbursement. If they didn't have Medicare, their doors would close. That's absolute fact. And you go to the local hospitals here, don't take my word for it. You go and look at the biggest reimbursement they get, I guarantee you it is Medicare. Now, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, they pay well, but of course you have to have a contract. But what happens when you don't have a contract with them? You don't get paid for it. You have to pay out of your pocket. So you have to be selective with that.
So
Well, the thing is with Medicare is that what a lot of people don't know, the insurance company are the people that write the regulations for Medicare. That's where they get this from. The American Medical Association write what we call common procedure terminology. So we can't bill if they don't bill for the exact right procedure. You can't make up a procedure and say, oh, well, I'm going to submit a bill for this because I think I should get paid for it. It's not allowed. Some of those things we have to have in line. I do agree with you that we have too much red tape in there. And one of the other reasons is why you've got the wrong people on the boards. That's why we need to appropriate nurses and doctors and other people on these panels that really know what's going on instead of business people that don't work with medicine. Would you hire someone to work for your business if that was a civil engineer and you're working in healthcare? No, you wouldn't. You hire someone with medical experience.
All right, more questions from the audience.
Let me make another statement here because it's my show.
Because we can.
And Shelley provided lunch for everybody here. So we fed you and we're entertaining you. So, you know, how many people here are generally happy with your health coverage? Okay? So it's, about 55%, maybe 50%, maybe. Okay, thank you. How many people here are not happy with your health coverage? One or two? Okay, so we've got some people that didn't vote here. Is it because you're just not sure about it? I mean, we're not taking names or anything. The thing about Medicare, and what all of us say in here, is, and I'm sure Dr. Von Moll, from doctors that I've talked to, is they used to be able to see X number of patients a day. The paperwork has become so horrendous that it's cut out literally 3 to 4 patients a day that they can see just to keep the paperwork. And when before they could keep, you know, somebody could do all their billing for them, now they're having to hire, if I understand this right, a registered nurse or somebody with medical training just to do the paperwork, and then they have to check it afterwards. Linda's brother is a doctor 7 days a week. His retirement plan is to drop dead in the office. So, and he works in a pain center there. Anyway.
Well, you know, our office has these totally integrated electronic medical records that I paid through the nose for after a lot of research about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It doesn't save me time. I hope you know that.
No, it doesn't save time.
I have to have it to get stuff done, and it grants a lot of other capabilities, but it does not save time. And Medicare, in addition to what you were talking about, ma'am, mm-hmm. any given blue moon, they can decide they're going to deadbeat me. They've done it twice. Last time was for $70,000. They just said I hadn't billed them in a year. And I had billed them every day, including the one they were telling me I hadn't billed them. It took 7 months, staff, consultants, Wally Herger, cost me $36,000 to get paid back $36,000 on the $70,000 they owed me.
You didn't have to pay Wally $30,000.
And you have no recourse. And they can do that. How can these people be in the red when they keep their books that way? Imagine if you only had to pay, you know, half your stuff.
And here's the good thing about what we're doing here on these Fridays coming up is that this is a place for all of us to be able to be educated, to agree to disagree, to be civil, speak our minds, ask people on both sides, what do you think? It's really good for all of us to integrate and get to know why do you feel that way and what's your information. And so as we work the room, we'll try to get to everybody, but right now we have a question from Joe.
I'm going to try to be civil there.
That's our only rule to be civil. Our guests are like guests in our home.
I am a Navy Air veteran. Can you hold the mic closer?
I am a Navy Air veteran. I do not use my veteran's insurance. I have a very bad experience. I pay privately $1,200 or $1,300 a month for a family of three. Urologists won't take Blue Cross Blue Shield in this town. If I want to see a urologist, I've got to go to Sacramento. The best art in this town, but they won't take that insurance. They won't take that insurance because of lawyers. They also, by the way, you speak very well government speech. Very well. But I don't believe a word you say.
Thank you, though. I appreciate it.
Your experience is in probably some city, I'm sure. If you knew the truth, my urologist is a Canadian. He fled the country because they don't let doctors make money in Canada. If you go to Cincinnati, it's full of Canadians. The Cincinnati hospitals are full of Canadians. If you go to Florida, the hospitals are full of Canadians. they're living there in summer homes just to get American health care. The first thing you have to do is get the lawyers out of the program. You don't need $10 million or $20 million if somebody you know dies. You don't need it. It's not going to fix the cause.
Thank you. You know, we're going to go to the phones. We have somebody on there since we have not done this before.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Martin, good morning. Good afternoon.
Martin,
can you hear us? Okay, Martin, call back. Sorry. Okay, next question.
All right, we have a question over here. Did you?
Let me make another quick statement here too. It's just like where Joe, you have to go down. You have to go down to Sacramento for your same thing with the Veterans Clinic. By the way, we have to send many times. We may have to send our World War II veterans, 85 years old, 80 to 85 or older, down to Beale because we can't get the treatment here in town. So it's a 12-hour round trip. They leave at 6 in the morning, and they get back at 6 at night for maybe a 20-minute MRI. This, you know, that's broken. That needs to be fixed. Anyway, okay, next. So we've got like about 8 minutes.
Okay, question from the audience. And your name?
My question is, first of all, I want to make a couple of comments. Number one is that, yes, the system is broken, but you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and you can't complete this system all in one fell swoop. It has to be done by parts, based on what is the worst. The second part that I want to make as far as the statement is concerned, if Medicare is got problems in terms of fraud, misuse, all of the other issues of why they are losing money, then let's take that money, find out why it's going out the back door, put it back into the system, not use it to build another system. Because that money belongs to the Medicare people, recipients, as well as depositors, not to some other system that has to be developed. So I think that's a wrong concept. The other thing that concerns me that we haven't addressed to the extent that I think is worthwhile addressing today, and that is the big lobbies that are pushing to cause our healthcare system to be more expensive. Yes, we have the legal system. We know that we have tort reform, but they also have a very big lobby. We also have pharmaceuticals. They have a major lobby. You can't hardly go on television without seeing a pharmaceuticals ad someplace or multiple times, and they're not 30-second ads, they're 3-minute ads. This is costing a ton of money. So what's the methodology behind their mindset that is impacting the cost of the healthcare system, and is it really helping us, or is it hurting us? Because as far as my wife and I are concerned, we both feel that the reason why I raise my hand and don't have a problem with the system as much, at least 50%, is the fact that we are responsible for ourselves. I don't want the government being responsible for me. I don't even want my doctor being responsible for me. I got to take care of myself. My wife has to take care of herself.
You know, the idea of taking responsibility for your actions, I think maybe we've lost that in this country. And we need to get that back. Okay, let's go to the phones. Martin, good afternoon. Technology is working.
All right. Okay. So let's go. We have another question from our audience member.
This is Jim. I'd just like to say, glossing over our open borders and our legal aliens along with their anchor babies, and then trying to build a medical program around this problem is the problem. Thank you.
Since that's come up a couple of times, I'm sure most of you in the audience are aware how many emergency departments have closed in the Los Angeles basin and San Diego, specifically because the vast majority of everybody they were seeing, from baby delivery to gunshot wound to suture requirement, was in fact people that were unregistered immigrants. Entire hospitals have closed, and it's not just a few we're talking about. So certainly for us in the border states, California, Arizona, right on through to Texas, it's a tremendous problem for us, but yeah, it exists elsewhere too.
Okay, I think we have a phone call over. Should we take another question from our audience?
Take another question from the audience because, this is at best.
Okay. John, since you're standing right here.
Can I call you, Paula?
Yes, sir.
The Bacchus Law that's
the basis for this new insurance concept is coming down. It calls for criminalization if you don't offer government insurance. How is this right? How is it right to make criminals out of people who don't opt for insurance, no matter what the circumstances? That's number one. I'll give you, just let me ask the second question, and then I'll listen to your answer. I've tried personally to find health care for people who were on Medicare and Medi-Cal and needed help in this town. I've called doctor after doctor after doctor and got refusals from everybody. People don't accept Medi-Cal. They don't accept Medicare. And the system isn't working there. Why should we assume that a complete government takeover is going to work any better? Why are they going to want to accept this? But number one, the criminalization.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir, for your question. As far as criminalization, I would not like to see people made criminals in the lieu of this health care regarding it. But you have to realize right now, this is a proposal right now. It is not an actual bill yet. They are working on it, and they're working on the merging with the two Senate bills and the three House bills, which we have also House Resolution 676. So, no, sir, I do understand your concern, and I don't want to see people pay more money, and I certainly don't want good American citizens locked up for that. But we have to get involved, and this is something that can be changed before the real bill comes out. Now, as far as Medicare and Medi-Cal, a lot of physicians, and I work for a lot, and not to mention I've lived in several states, and I've been here in California for the last 20 years almost now. But Medi-Cal is extremely difficult to get here. As far as Medicare itself, doctors take Medicare. I work with a lot of physicians, and they take Medicare. However, Medi-Cal, which is for low-income people under 65 years of age, many people do not take. And I'll give you an example why. Because of the low cost. But low cost, I mean, gee whiz. If you go get a dressing or some wound care and it costs $30 and they only pay $7, I mean, would you want that? No, you couldn't keep your doors open with that. If you have a $310,000 open heart surgery procedure and you only get $30,000 for it, is that going to keep your doors open? No, it may not. These are some of the issues, and this is why we have reimbursement issues. Is the system perfect? No, it's not. And this is what we have to fix. So I'm not supporting that. This form of proposition is all correct and everything in there is 100% correct. We have to change it and make it right for America. They've only started it, and we have to fix it and make it right. Thank you.
If I could have a statement here, too, is except if, oh, that's the city, that, you know, that sound of the swimming breaks was our city planners at work. The government is our friend. And I think when we get right down to it, and excuse me, the government, you know, the scariest sound in the world is that statement, hey, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. I think that, that what I've heard today, believe it or not, and I wouldn't have believed it, except, and Paula, you're representing the Democratic Party here at Shasta County, as many things that you've said today sound very much like the Republican Party statement, you know. And I think the one thing she has said that's very important is that we the people have got to stand up and tell the people in Washington, keep your hands off this. There's things that have to be changed. Change those that we can change and not get into our business. Let us accept responsibility. If we don't accept the responsibility for our lives, I sure as hell don't want somebody that I don't know making that decision for me. I never have like that. And I'm kind of hearing that from both sides. So, because it's an internet show, we can go a little bit longer. So if y'all don't mind, if we can make a couple closing statements here.
Well, very briefly, the system's got tons of problems. There's a lot of things that need fixing. But again, over 50 cents out of every healthcare dollar is already coming from the government. I don't think upping that percentage is going to fix anything. We're partly in the fix we're in because of excessive government meddling and rules about this and that and this. And things have consequences. We're living in the consequences. There are simpler things that can be done over a broad spectrum that we've hit on today involving insurance, the tort reform, a good many other things that could go a very long way toward fixing this, short of taking a step towards something we're all going to regret and nationalizing the healthcare system. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's been a real pleasure being here with each of you. I'm so glad to be a part of this with you. What I would like to leave you with is that, you know, all of us are touched by healthcare and our healthcare current system. I myself am not immune to it. I have a family member that has a pre-existing condition, and you wonder what's going to happen to them tomorrow. Suppose you're not here, who's going to care for them? Think about it, someone has to. Covering students, what's going to happen to students? So one thing alone that may even help is my daughter, she's at college age now. Why can't we cover her to 26 or 30 years old? Let them go to school so they can be productive in the future. I would love to. If parents are willing to do that, let us do it and pay cash for it if we want to. So I personally feel we have to get involved. We have to take a stand. People can't hear when you're yelling, so we have to communicate together and be on the same line together. You are what you eat, you are what you think, and you are what you breathe, and you are what you do. Help to keep someone else's loved one's hope alive. Thank you for listening.
Are we going to try to finally take that phone call?
Yeah, we're
going to
try.
Okay, we're going to try one more time for the phone call.
We want to cheer if it happens.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yay! Hey, Martin, you just got a standing ovation. Are you there?
Martin. Martin.
We can hear you, Martin. Talk.
Yeah, I can hear you finally.
Okay.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah, what's your question, Martin?
It's not a question. I just wanted to congratulate you guys on your new show.
Thank you so much.
All right. I'll be listening in every Friday.
All right.
Well, thanks
Martin,
a lot, Martin.
You.
Thank you very much.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Thanks
right.
so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
This has been
Talk to you later.
Thank Bye-bye. You so much. Thank you again for Tobacco and Brew. They've got the best coffee at Espresso Joe's if you want to go to the store. And let me hear you next Friday. What are we talking about next Friday?
I think we're going to talk a little bit about the Second Amendment and how that's being chipped away at here in the state of California. We need your help. We need the help of every one of you here and everybody that's listening, the hundreds of thousands that are listening. Okay, not quite 100,000. We need you to spread the word, to tell your friends, and then to join us next week. We, you know, because we're going to have, you know, people here on the panel that we're going to be discussing it. You know, I don't know if we're going to find anybody in the city of Reading or the North State that can say, nah, I think we got too much. I think we have too many guns here. And we don't really need all that ammo. And when you do get the ammo, what's wrong with giving a thumbprint?